Sometimes you'll hear the phrase asked, what would Jesus do? WWJD. In fact, it's so cliche these days that I've seen even like the youth, they get little bracelets that have WWJD on it. They say, what would Jesus do? As if this is kind of the almost wisdom of, well, this is how to deal with any situation. You just ask yourself, what would Jesus do? Well, today's gospel always reminds me that the answer to that question might just be, well, Jesus would make a whip out of cords and beat everybody in the church. So keep that one in mind. Because I think we tend to make what would Jesus do mean some kind of fuzzy, cuddly, sort of huggable Jesus that, you know, wouldn't Jesus just be nice to everybody? And wouldn't Jesus just want everybody to get along? And Jesus wouldn't impose like hard rules or things. He made a whip out of cords, okay? I mean, that's within the realm of possibility of what would Jesus do. Now, we might ask ourselves then, well, what exactly happened that Jesus got so mad? Because it is true, we don't normally see Jesus running around beating people in the scriptures. This does stick out. So what happened? Well, of course, we know that in the temple area, Jesus shows up for Passover, and he finds that they've got oxen and sheep and doves and money changers. And, you know, we might, in our own righteous indignation, say, yeah, this is ridiculous. Good job, Jesus. Good for you. Get those bad people out of there. What are they thinking? Well, that's maybe a good thing to think, but we kind of have to ask ourselves, like, okay, how did it get this way? I mean, why are there oxen in the temple? Why is there a bank set up in the sacred place for worship? You know, imagine if you came here today and there's like an ox roaming through the lobby, or, you know, just little sheep that just keep running all over the place. You know, however much we might think that it'd be good to focus on the Good Shepherd or something like that, if there are animals running around the church, all of us would say, well, that's not appropriate. And yet that's exactly what was going on in the temple. Why? How did it get that way? Well, I would suggest that it probably didn't happen all at once. I think it probably happened a little bit at a time. Because you see, it's not so far-fetched when you consider how it might have happened. See, these people are coming to Passover for the feast, and they need to have animals to sacrifice. Oxen, sheep, doves, these are the animals that get sacrificed in the temple. So that's not so strange. Problem is that people would normally bring their animal with them to sacrifice from their own herd or their own flock. Well, it didn't take long before people said, yeah, you know what? Some people, it might be hard to travel with animals. We'll set up our own little animal selling shop right in Jerusalem. This way people don't have to bring their own animal. And when they get to Jerusalem, you can just stop by the local sheep shop, go to the oxen cart, and get your animal there. And it saves you all the trouble of having to feed this animal on the long journey. You just buy it when you get to Jerusalem. So that's a great idea. And so people start setting up their little shops, and you can buy your animals. And pretty soon they start to say, well, I mean, everybody's going to the temple to sacrifice the animals. We should get close to the temple. It makes sense. And so they move closer to the temple. And pretty soon people are like, well, I mean, we're bringing the animals in to sacrifice them anyway. They're going to be in the temple in just a second. Why not just, we'll move the sheep shop right inside the gate? I mean, not too far, just right at the gate. I mean, so people could come in the gate. You buy your sheep, you buy your oxen. Good. It just cuts out the time in between. There's nothing wrong with that. But then they're like, well, you know, if we're going to sell oxen and sheep in the temple, we got a problem because you can't be using secular coins to do that. I mean, we're going to have some way for them to change the secular coins into the sacred coins so that they could buy the animals since we're in the temple now. So, I mean, we probably need some people to set up and make the change. So, tell you what, we'll put the money changers with their table over here, and we'll move the oxen over there. And so now you can just come into the temple, and it's like one-stop shopping. You do your currency exchange, you buy your sheep, and it just all just streamlines the worship just real well. And all of a sudden, we see that, wait a minute, we've got oxen running around the temple. How did this happen? Well, it happened one little bad decision at a time. One little thing that doesn't seem too bad. We just push the envelope a little bit. And before you know it, there's an ox in your house. This is how it happens. One little bit at a time. And before we all laugh at that and say, well, that's, yeah, we all do that. That's exactly what we all do. In fact, you know, just look at the Ten Commandments from our first reading today, a good kind of examination of conscience. How are we doing on that? It's amazing how many times people come to confession like, well, I didn't kill anybody, so that's good, and, you know, pass the fifth commandment. And yeah, but see, the devil is not going to get us to, like, go out and commit some huge sin right away. And he's subtle. He's going to get us to start to move our sheep just a little bit closer to the temple. And before you know it, there's an ox in your living room. This is how it works. So, I mean, just as one example, one of the commandments, just let's look at keep holy the Sabbath day. Okay, it doesnn't just say keep holy the Sabbath day. It actually elaborates quite a bit in our first reading. Don't do this. Not even your servant, not even your animals working on the Sabbath. Okay, how are we doing on that one? How are we doing on keeping holy the Sabbath day? Would people even know when they came to your neighborhood, your house, our city, our country, would they know that Sunday is a high holy day for all Christians each week? I can tell you that sometimes God just, like, hits me over the head sometimes with a homily, and I was thinking about this yesterday, coming back from lunch, literally walking right down Null Avenue in the middle of Leawood, I saw a guy that looked like he's wearing a top hat. I'm like, this is a crazy person. But then I got closer, I'm like, well, that's not a top hat. I could see that he also had the little prayer cords coming down from his waist. That's his Sabbath hat. And he had his Sabbath coat on. It's a Jew, an Orthodox Jew. This is the Sabbath. And so he's dressed up for the Sabbath. He's not even near a synagogue, but it's the Sabbath day. So he's got his Sabbath hat, his Sabbath coat, his prayer shawl on. He's not afraid to say, yeah, I'm Jewish. It's the Sabbath. Everyone knows that this day is special. It kind of reminded me of my time in the Holy Land. When I lived in Bethlehem, which is a predominantly Muslim city, on Friday, the Muslim holy day, the whole place shut down. You know there's something special about this day because everything's closed, and then all the imams are preaching over the speakers and the minarets, and you know this whole town, something is special today. It's the Muslim holy day. Same way in Jerusalem on Shabbat, on Saturday. Everything's closed. Everyone goes to the Western Wall to pray as the Sabbath begins on Friday night, and everything opens back up Saturday night when the Sabbath is over and everybody goes out partying. Something is different on Saturday in Jerusalem, and everybody knows it. Would anybody know it in America to say, oh, this is Sunday, that's why everything is so strange today? Well, it used to be that way. It used to be nothing was open on Sunday, and you know, how did we get to where we are today? Well, little by little. Well, we got to have restaurants open. I mean, that makes sense. People that can go out and have a leisurely breakfast, and hey, I'm not one to complain about that. I'll go to a restaurant on Sunday. I enjoy it. But and then we're like, well, you know, obviously Sunday is a day off limits for other activities, and pretty soon people said, well, I mean, everybody goes to church Sunday morning, so, I mean, Sunday afternoon, that's a lot of open time. We could play sports Sunday afternoon, couldn't we? I mean, we wouldn't dare touch Sunday morning, and that's for God. But Sunday afternoon, I mean, why not? It could even be family. Why not? Sure. So we start playing games on Sunday afternoon and practicing. And then, you know, pretty soon, it's like, well, I mean, not everybody goes to church Sunday morning. And boy, it sure seems like that's a pretty free block in the schedule with so many games on Saturday now. There's not enough time on Saturday. I mean, Sunday morning, I mean, like a Catholic church, you could go to Mass on Saturday night, or you can work God in somewhere during the day on Sunday. I mean, people will make it work. And we can play games on Sunday morning. And pretty soon, we're playing games Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, Saturday. You know, we thought letting people go to Mass on Saturday evening would make people go to Mass more. It'd be easier. Well, pretty soon, people are like, well, we'll fit God in somewhere. Maybe Saturday evening, maybe Sunday. But I mean, we were busy Sunday morning this time. And then pretty soon it's next week, too, to say, well, something else came up and God understands. And, you know, I go to Mass most times. Or then it becomes, well, I mean, we go to Mass at least once a month. We are devout Catholics. We would never go a whole month without Mass. And then pretty soon you're Christmas and Easter. And it just, this is how it goes. It doesn't start all at once. It's little by little by little, compromise, compromise, compromise. And pretty soon you got, you know, even good Catholic parents asking, I don't know what to do. My kid's got a game on Sunday morning. I mean, how do we fight that? Well, the problem is culture happens one little decision at a time. Paul, in our second reading today, gives us, I think, some important wisdom. He's basically telling us that if you're going to be Christian, You should get used to being thought a fool. Now think about that. He starts off with two key points. He says, okay, to Jews, you're going to be fools as well as Greeks. Jews, they want signs. So if you're going to prove your authority for the Jews, the Messiah needs to do powerful wonders, like, you know, prophets that show up and wipe out all the other prophets, or call down fire from heaven, signs that point to their true authority. Well, Paul says, Jesus was crucified. That's a terrible sign. That's the worst possible sign there could be for a Messiah. The Messiah can't die. Clearly, that's a bad sign. Or Jews looking for signs. What about the Greeks looking for wisdom? Subtlety of teaching. Wisdom that comes from intellectual argument. Well, if Jesus is supposed to be the divine Logos through which the whole world was created, how can the Logos be killed by his own creation? The creator of everything overcome by his own creation? That's terrible wisdom. It's foolishness to Greeks, Jews alike. But Paul says, but here's the thing. Yeah, you look foolish to the world if it's just a Messiah who died or a God who's overcome by the world, but that's not the whole story. See, the reason why Sunday is so holy and why it's so special is because it's not the end of the story on Good Friday. Okay, Jesus rose from the dead on Sunday. And I think we forget about the significance of that. Paul says if that didn't happen, if Jesus is not raised from the dead, then yes, we're fools. Our whole faith makes no sense if Jesus is a Messiah who died and a God who was killed by the world. But because that's not the case, because Jesus really does rise from the dead on Sunday, well, now we've got something. Now it's okay to look like a fool the rest of the time because you've got a wisdom that goes way deeper than anything else. The question is then, are we willing to stand up with our faith and be willing to look like a fool every now and then? You want to know how culture gets to the way it does? Why is it that we're here? Well, compromise. So what turns it around? Well, it's going to be one little decision at a time. One family starting to say, well, we're not afraid to look like a fool. I mean, yeah, my kid's not playing Sunday. Sorry, it's the Lord's Day. What if it's not just one family that's foolish like that? What if everybody starts to do that to the point where people have to say, yeah, all right, our league can't play on Sunday. The Catholics, they got their thing. They take the day off. There's no, we can't have a team without the Catholics, and the Catholics do their thing. I mean, we got people that put fish specials out on Fridays during Lent because, well, the Catholics do their thing. You know, imagine if we just all started banding together a little bit more to say, all right, we're not afraid to be foolish. Like that Jew walking down Leawood yesterday, dressed up in Sabbath clothes. He's not worried. Like, yeah, I'm a Jew. It's the Sabbath. Praise God. What about us? Maybe a good kind of examination of conscience for us then as we make this journey through Lent is simply to look at where have we compromised? Look at the Ten Commandments. I just took one today. Keep holy the Sabbath day. I mean, look at all of them. Okay, shall not bear false witness. No one goes up and becomes a liar with one lie. You're a liar if you're lying over and over and over and over, and it's a little lie first, and then a bigger one. I mean, no one commits adultery just overnight. Oh, it just happened. Where are we compromising? Where are we lusting? Things like that. Look at all the commandments and say, all right, where am I compromising? Where have I let the sheep and the oxen into my temple? It's a good kind of reflection. Because we know that we ask ourselves, what would Jesus do? Well, we know it's possible. Jesus will show up and beat you. So maybe it's like, let's let the fire marshal in early and say, okay, let's look around the temple. Where are the weaknesses? Where are the problems? Do a little inventory before the fire breaks out. Because we don't want Jesus showing up with a whip to our life to beat us up because it got out of hand. Let's get it early. Let's look now and say, where am I compromising? Where do I need to make some changes? Because if we don't, before you know it, there's an ox in your living room, okay? So today, let's sweep up ourselves, okay? Let's look at our temple, see, all right, what's a sheep doing there? Why is there a sheep in my house? Okay, it's time to clean up. Let's clean up our own temples before Jesus has to show up with a whip.